Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Key Ingredient Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Betsy Opit. Betsy is a registered dietitian located down here in beautiful Naples, Florida. Betsy, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for the invite. I'm very excited to be here.
It's a great topic, and I'm looking forward to really getting in-depth with it. Do me a favor, Betsy, if you don't mind, for our viewers and our listeners, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yep. Well, I'm a registered dietitian, and I just recently opened a yoga studio, so I've always been passionate about health and wellness. Actually, from the age of about 13, I knew my calling in life was to be a registered dietitian. So I've been at this for a long time. I say I'm an advocate for healthy lifestyle, healthy living, healthy changes, and just really helping people optimize their health for, you know, longevity living. And I think it's really important that there are self-care things we can do every day that will optimize our health that aren't hard, they're not radical diets or anything like that. It's just learning your body and being more mindful and incorporating all aspects of health. And that's why I don't just focus on nutrition. It's that mindfulness, it's body movement, it's just that awareness and just making sure that you're putting your body first.
So overall wellness in general, basically.
Absolutely.
All right. So listen, I was going to ask you kind of how you got to this point in your profession, and you mentioned age 13. So let's go back a couple of years, right?
Okay.
To 13. So what was the catalyst? So what were you like at age, let's say 12?
Okay.
And what kind of brought you to age 13 to be so interested in this profession?
Well, I was an athlete. I mean, from the moment I came out of my mom, I was just always active. And so my mom put me in dance and then I got into circus. I was a circus performer at age 7, which then flew into, into gymnastics, then diving. So I was always acrobatic. And I remember there was a point my mom had actually gone to go see a registered dietitian, which, you know, I thought was really neat because she came home. She's like, oh, I learned all about food and healthy eating, and it might actually help you in your sports if you start eating healthier. Because I'm like your typical 12-year-old, whatever.
Sugar, sweets,
yeah,
lots of really good ice cream.
Yeah. And I was picky, and I didn't like vegetables. And I think it was my mom's way to say, hey, you need to start eating your veggies, because I wouldn't eat anything green. And so she gave me an article, and I read it. I was like, oh, wow, so if I start eating sweet potatoes and veggies, it'll provide me more nourishment so I can actually be a better performer and a better athlete. And so that was the small catalyst. And even in my teenage years, I remember anytime I could read an article, and this was kind of prior to when the whole big boom in the health industry, like people really cared about nutrition. This was like right at the beginning of that.
Sure.
So anytime I saw an article, I'd read it and I'd start adopting these changes in my life and my body, and I felt good. I performed well. And I was the one that we're at Taco Bell with my friends. I'm like, you should not be eating that.
Oh, you were one of those, huh?
But I just integrated slow changes over time and just really made them lifestyle habits. So I know so much more now than I did obviously in my teenage years, and I never stop learning. I'm constantly into podcasts and different studies that are coming out about nutrition because it's always evolving. We're learning more and more about the human body. And what I'm fascinated about is a well care system instead of a sick care system. And with this whole outbreak and everything that's happened over the year, I think it's an awakening for people that we're not as healthy as we think. And, you know, 88% of the American population is metabolically compromised. And, you know,
what does that mean, metabolically compromised?
So your metabolism isn't optimized. You have trouble with sugar balances. Like people with prediabetes would be a good case of saying metabolic syndrome. So it's just your organs aren't functioning at their prime level. And so it's a slow deterioration of our body, but it's a silent disease because a lot of people aren't even aware they have it, but it's an underlying inflammation. And as we know, inflammation is the precursor to every disease.
So. Sure. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So in high school then, okay. So you're into sports.
Yeah.
You're very active. You started eating healthy. I mean, were you as clean of an eater as can be, or did you deviate like other kids, or kind of how hardcore were you?
Yeah. It's a really good question. Cause I think it's a self-discovery of our body for everyone as to knowing what style of eating works for you. So back then, that was like in the 90s, it was fat-free, remember? So that's what all the information we were being fed in the media was, fat is horrible for you, go fat-free, eat all the carbs you want, you know? So I kind of followed that trend, realizing that wasn't good for my body.
Right.
You know, and then all the other trends start coming out. And so I call what I adopt now through just trial and error and learning everything about different styles of eating for your own unique body, I call it a flexitarian diet. So I don't marry black and white as to the style of of what I should be eating. And what I've learned through my integrative and functional nutrition background is that there's different stages in life that we need different types of foods and different balances of food. Because I'm not a young teenager anymore and abundant with all this exercise. Like, I can't just eat all the calories in the world and all the carbs. You know, so my body's now aging and I'm in my 40s. So now I'm really geared towards prevention and reducing inflammation. So my diet has changed dramatically and I kind of graduate more towards plant-based, like getting more bang for my buck. When I eat, I want function. When I eat, I want the food to do something for me. So I also, when I say flexitarian and why I say it's not black and white, is I like that little bit of freedom that if I want to go have some pizza with my family, I'm not going to be like, I can't eat that. I'm going to die, you know? So I think everyone kind of needs to loosen up a little bit and not really feel they have to follow this diet, but they need to really find what works for them. And working with a professional that has that understanding of the body, maybe looking over their labs, their lifestyle, their stress, their exercising, really formulating a plan that works for them instead of against them. Because a lot of times we adopt these cookie cutter diets or whatever the fad is at the moment. It might work for a handful of people, but for the mass population, it doesn't work because it's not a style of eating that really suits their particular body.
Well, fad diets are interesting that you mentioned it because you mentioned fat-free, right? Then we went to, like you said, then there was sugar-free. Yeah. And I don't know the order.
And then but then Atkins.
And then there was Atkins. And exactly, South Beach. Because then all of a sudden, carbs became our enemy, right? Now, someone who's been an athlete their whole life, I'm sure you would agree. I mean, carbs are needed to some degree, right? Yeah. I mean, we all have this bad connotation of what carbs are all about. So what do you think are good ways to eat carbs? What are good carbs, in your opinion, of what we should be eating?
So I always put that twist on function first. So when I'm looking at a carb, if I'm going to eat that as a source of energy, I also want it to be an anti-inflammatory source of energy. So it's not the white refined flours and sugars and things that break down quickly. They may give you a glucose rush, but they have no other nutrients or fiber in them. So I look at things like fruits. I mean, fruits are very cleansing for our body. It's reducing inflammation. It puts your body in a more alkaline state. You absorb your vitamins and minerals in a balanced state like that. So those type of foods, like the fruits, but also the whole grains, the more ancient grains. You want to stay away from crops like the traditional wheats and things that are high in GMOs and glyphosates. But gearing more towards like sweet potato, quinoa, which is actually a seed and not a grain, and some of those more ancient types of grains, which are very wholesome in fiber and riboflavin, those B vitamins. And so they provide more benefit to you along with the carbohydrates.
So is brown rice a good source, or is that not really?
It's not one of the highest quality. Okay. I wouldn't put it as my first pick. I mean, quinoa really is one of my favorites.
I eat it almost every night, so yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah, huge fan. So you mentioned about being in balance. Mm-hmm. How do we know if we're in balance or out of balance? How does that work?
That's a tricky question. It's not like our bodies come with an owner manual, you know, and we of course have lab testing, but that doesn't always uncover issues that might be going on in the body. So I like to do more functional-based testing, tests that you're not going to get at your traditional doctor. So when someone comes to me and they're like, I'm having trouble losing weight, I have this sort of disease, I'm on this plethora of medications, I start digging. Okay, so what's your lifestyle like? How many toxins are you exposed to? Do you have regular bowel movements? Do you have any digestive issues? You know, then I start exploring a little bit of their diet, seeing are they eating out a lot? Is there alcohol, lots of sugar in the diet? Like, where is this inflammation being stemmed from? And then I just kind of go from there, uncovering what we need to work on in their body. A lot of people, believe it or not, it's your liver. And a lot of it stems from, and one of the fastest growing diseases, and a lot of people don't know this, they think it's heart disease, cancer, diabetes. Fastest growing disease is fatty liver.
So what's fatty liver? What does that entail?
So basically our liver is congested. It's accumulation of fat, and you will see your triglycerides elevate. You might see your liver enzymes elevate, or it might just be an underlying digestive issue, because if the liver's sluggish, your gallbladder's not working, your gallbladder's not producing bile, the bile's not in the stomach to start breaking things down, undigested food particles going down into your gut, wreaking havoc, and this is where we call leaky gut. And leaky gut is a very subtle beginning nuance, and people start to get leaky gut, and then all of a sudden they start getting food sensitivities, they have underlying inflammation, and then when the gut's a mess and the liver's a mess, so is your heart, so are your lungs, the kidneys, all of the other organs start to be affected, and the brain as well. There's something called leaky brain. Actually, they call every organ has a leaky component to it. And what it just means is it's not optimized. There could be nutrients leaking out or an inefficiency. So I see in my practice, and I really am specializing in this now, is the gut and liver connection, because so many people are walking around with this issue, don't even know they have it. Doctors aren't testing for it. It's not like you can go in and say, is there fat on my liver? You know, it's a harder test to go in and kind of diagnose that.
Wow. So from what I'm hearing here, and correct me if I'm wrong, the game has really changed. I mean, you go back years ago, I think we were all under the assumption that everybody's body was similar, right? We'd eat three meals a day and whatever. We eat a little bit of everything, and ultimately that's how we live. Then we went to these six meals a day, right? That was the big thing. And now what I'm hearing you say is our bodies are all so different. The way we react to things are so different. And science has changed and education has changed. And it's really interesting, actually, to kind of hear you say that, because it almost makes everyone want to go see someone like you, because you could identify certain issues, like things like you mentioned, like inflammation and things like that. I mean, Crohn's disease, we're hearing more and more. It seems like we're hearing more and more about things like Crohn's disease or IBS in general. Is it just me, or is it actually something that's becoming more prominent out there?
It's no, absolutely, by far. I see that way more in my practice, but I'm seeing it younger and younger. I'm having younger kids coming in with digestive issues, food allergies. And, you know, when you see teenagers walking around with the acne, I mean, it makes me feel sad. I want to go to their mom and say, we need to fix their gut. Sure. It's not their skin or their skin regimen. It's the gut is, the skin is actually an external part of the gut. It's all the same type of cells. So what's going on in your gut will show up on your skin. And so when you have leaky gut, you have leaky skin, you have breakouts. You know, so a lot of this underlying inflammation, people aren't recognizing where the root cause is. They may not even be connecting the two, but all of the organs work together as a synergy. And so when one's off, it kind of trickles down. So sometimes it's hard. You know, you might get diagnosed with heart disease, but you didn't realize it's actually your liver that's causing the heart disease, not the cholesterol in your diet or what you're eating. Wow. So it's really identifying the issue. And yes, the gut issues are the biggest thing. And I think it's because of the change in culture, the change in agriculture and how foods are produced, the pesticides, the residues, the glyphosates are very new to our diet. It's only been since, like, I think the late 80s, early 90s when our body started introducing this. Now, think about it. We're much older as an adult. Think of our kids who are being exposed to this so early and have decades yet to keep consuming this. What's going to happen to their bodies? So that's the liver having to detoxify this glyphosate. And so we're going to see fatty liver starting to happen in teenagers and much younger.
It's amazing. I was going to ask you if that was something, if it was just we're learning more about this, that people have had these issues for years, or is it something with what we're eating, basically?
Well, I think it's both. I think the food has changed dramatically, and there's so much more processed foods. I mean, when you go to the grocery store, the majority of the store is packaged, processed, not made, you know, in the ground. It's made by man. And so that's something I always coach my people is get as close to nature as you can. Even if you can container garden in your backyard and just be really close to your food, that food has energy. And the more hands and the more machines that food has to go through, the less nourishment, the less energy. And you just, when our bodies are so deprived, and that's the problem is because our soils aren't rich, we're not getting the minerals, we're mineral deprived, our bodies are acidic, so we're not actually absorbing the nutrients we're eating through our food. So people are very malnourished. And when you have someone, and I work with clients all the time, where they're like, I'm just hungry all the time. I'm like, well, it's because your cells are dying for nourishment. And so it keeps sending a signal to your brain to eat because it's looking for that zinc and that magnesium and all those elements in the food you're not getting because the food you're eating is dead, basically.
Wow. So you could be eating the same amount of food, I guess, but just different type of food.
Yeah. It's not about calories in versus calories out. Managing health and weight is not a calorie controlled. It's an inflammation control.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And about everyone that comes in my practice, I highly encourage doing micronutrient testing. We find out a lot right there.
What does that entail? How do you
do that? So it's a blood test, and it'll show all your vitamins and minerals, like your main like A, D, E, K, like the fat soluble. It goes through all the water soluble, like the B vitamins. It looks at minerals, which is a really important one to focus on because that's where most people are deficient. But the thing about our immune systems is 80%, I'd even say possibly 90% of our immune system is housed in our gut. And most people don't realize that we have more bacteria in our bodies, in our gut, than we do endothelial cells, which are actually human cells. So our bacteria are actually running most of our body. Our bacteria communicates through the vagus nerve to the brain and actually sends signals to the brain. So if your bacteria is hungry, it tells your brain it's time to eat. So if you're feeding the wrong bacteria, and that bacteria is the type that signals you to eat sugar, it may not actually be your body craving sugar. It could be your bacteria. So you have the wrong imbalance of bacteria in your gut. So, and also bacteria are really what's responsible for breaking down our food and helping us to absorb those vitamin minerals into our body. So if you have the wrong gut microbiome, you may not even be absorbing nutrients because that bacteria is not there to break it down to assemble. And then some bacteria actually produce their own vitamins and minerals. Like vitamin K, for example, is produced primarily from your bacteria. So sometimes people are deficient because they have the wrong gut microbiome. So I also do stool testing in my practice to see where the gut and environment is, if it's healthy or in balance, if there's parasites. And trust me, everyone's got parasites. We need to start working on cleansing and rebalancing. And the best thing I can suggest doing is eat fiber. If you're eating enough fiber and enough raw food, you're going to feed the right bacteria. They'll thrive. And then the bad bacteria, the ones that crave the sugar and the fats and all that, will die. And then you won't crave those foods anymore.
Well, what are the best ways to get fiber? Is it strictly through eating, or is it okay to use some kind of a supplement as well to do that?
I think there's a synergy with the food itself. I think eating things like fruits and the vegetables, where you're also getting the other micronutrients in it, because think about those metal mucils and things. Those are processed. You know, so you're getting kind of that dead food again. I mean, yeah, it's fiber, but it's not the way I want people to get it. Because if you're eating the fiber and the fruit and the vegetables, you get full, and you don't want all the other junk when your body's full.
Sure. You mentioned sugar a little while ago. Mm-hmm. We all know sugar's not good for us at this point, but what about sugar substitutes, things like Splenda and Stevia? And what's your take on that? I mean, is that still bad for you? Is that still processed, right?
It is still processed. I mean, it is. Honestly, if you're going to use Stevia, just grow the plant and use the stevia leaf itself. That's the purest
way to do it.
Yeah. But I mean, there's monk fruit. There's some newer ones that have come out that I kind of put them in the yellow category, where, like, just caution. They're not horrible. Like some of the ones like Splenda and aspartame, the pink and the red, the blue packets, those are just all chemicals. Like those go and mess your brain up. Those mess your gut microbiome up. Those are definitely no-nos. But then you have the people like, well, coconut sugar, that's natural, and honey, that's natural. And that's where I'm like, well, yes, but if you're metabolically compromised, those can totally throw you, even though they might have some health or more natural benefits. So sugar's one I proceed with cautiously. And even the sugar substitutes, I personally do use them. I use stevia or monk fruit if I need to use a sweetener. But I try, for the most part, not to, and just go off the natural taste of food, because your tongue acclimates. And when you get used to eating the more natural, fresh, healthy foods, you tend to more crave those. You don't need that heightened sweetness or that really salty, savory when you kind of balance out your body better.
Interesting. And you get used to things in general.
You
I mean, like, so coffee, like I put some of those sweeteners in there.
Yeah.
And but I would imagine if I just slowly started taking it away, at some point I wouldn't really miss it, right?
No, and when you have a really good high-quality coffee, like I love my Nespresso, or I just came back from Costa Rica on a yoga retreat and I picked up a bag of organic from the local farmer. Hands down, best coffee I've ever had.
It has
like this chocolatey undertone. I'm like, I don't need anything in this. It's like perfect the way it is. So sometimes just acclimating, and it could be a slow process. And when I work with my clients, I really encourage that. I don't want you to have to do radical changes and, you know, get frustrated with that. It's like, just integrate slowly into your diet. Just try one new change at a time. It's much easier to adapt that way than trying to, you know, feel like you're following this rigid diet, because that's not the message I try to give with my clients. I want them to always accept this as a lifestyle change and, you know, be a willing participant. You know, when I used to work at the hospital, that was the most challenging thing as a hospital dietitian, because they were being forced to come see me. Doctor says, you have diabetes, go see the diabetic educator. And they're kind of here like, I don't want to give up sugar, you know? So it was hard not having a participant working with me. Now, in my practice now, since I'm an independent consultant, people seek me out because they're like, I've been everywhere. Doctors just want to put me on meds. I don't want to be on meds. I just want to fix this on my own. I'm like, let's work, you know, because I have someone that's willing to make changes, and I make it approachable and easy and like, okay, well, let's just switch this sugar substitute to this, or let's like swap out this for this. And they used to nickname me Betsy Crocker. I love to be in the kitchen cooking, and I'm really savvy at tweaking recipes and making them slightly healthier. So it's a natural thing for me to be like, all right, well, let's just get back in the kitchen. Here's a fun recipe. And I don't like to say cooking. I like to say assembling. So we're just going to assemble some of these foods together to make a meal. So because sometimes people, when they're not used to being in the kitchen cooking, and I know here in Naples, a lot of people, you go in their kitchen, you open the oven and the tag's still there.
Yeah, like, they go out to dinner a lot.
They go out to dinner all the time. It's a very different scene down here. But it's just getting people, again, more connected with their food. Like, you actually take honor and respect when you take the time to make a meal. There's a whole different energy there. When you've spent that energy going to the grocery store, pulling together a recipe, having this nourishing food, you respect that. And so when people sit down for their meals, I ask them to take a pause, like actually have gratitude for this beautiful, nourishing meal in front of you. And it's a whole different thought when you respect your food like that. Like, I always think before I eat, maybe not, and some people just eat and then worry later, about it later, but I do. I really take time in deciding what food's going to go in my body, and you know, why am I choosing these foods? Is it going to build me up and give me energy, or am I just going to have fun with this piece of pizza tonight, you know, enjoy it and not have shame and guilt? How many people walk around with shame and guilt with what they eat?
Sure.
You know, if you turn that and have more respect, you make different choices. You really do.
Makes a lot of sense. Let's shift gears a little bit to a topic that many of us, I guess, worry or are concerned about, and that's aging, right? Yeah. Nobody wants to age, and we want to do it as gracefully as possible. We want to look as good as we can for as long as we can. Is age truly just a number? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I was listening to a doctor on a podcast a few months ago, and they actually called aging a disease, that our bodies are really not meant to age. It's just our organs are being compromised and toxic and inflamed. And so that's what's causing the oxidative stress in our body, which is AGE, which is advanced glycated end products, which is part of that aging of the cell. So, I mean, there's ways to slow it down. There's ways to preserve our body. And it's just, again, it's understanding your body, nourishing, not just nourishing your body, because I don't want to say this is all about food, but it's moving your body, respecting your body, loving your body, emotions, your movement and activity and your food. All of those are very well connected, as well as your spiritual self. You know, all of that is part of the whole body. And then we also have a lot of people talk about this, and this isn't really in mainstream, but your energy self. All of us have a vibration and energy. Our organs, each organ has a vibration. I have a woman that comes to my office that does biofeedback, and that's actually testing each system in your body, the energy frequency. And when it's off, then we know that particular organ's compromised, and it helps me identify where we need to work first. You know, because I don't have a microscope, I can't go in your body and say, oh, it's your liver. You know, I could look at lab work, I could hear what you say, that gives me an indication. But if I can look at the frequency and vibration of your actual organs, it gives me a real indication of where to start. Like I said, they're all tied in. So if it's the liver or the brain or the heart, we start there, and then we start looking at all the systems and how they operate together.
Wow. Let's say on nutrition for a second. So with anti-aging, right, when it comes to nutrition, are there certain foods that we could be eating? I mean, we'd like to think there's some magic food we could eat, like kale or something like that. Are there foods that we should be eating? And I want to follow up with calories.
Okay.
Right? I've heard, and I don't know if this is true, you tell me, that as we get older, we should probably consume a little less in calories.
Yeah.
Is that a myth? Is that true?
Two very important topics, and they're both tied in with aging. So let's start with the foods to eat, antioxidants, anything that's rich in nutrients. I talked about the functional foods. So most people think, when I say antioxidants, they think berries, blueberries, strawberries. I go even deeper. I'm like, let's go into the deep Amazon and get the acai berry, the golden berry, the goji berry. Like, some of these are even richer. I go for camu powder, which is the world's richest sort of vitamin C. And vitamin C is an antioxidant, and it slows the aging process. In fact, we should be eating vitamin C all day long, whether it's supplemental form, if you can't eat the food sources, or just bits of citrus and peppers and strawberries and acai berry and camu powder. That's one way, kind of a biohack, to slow the aging process.
Okay.
Because it reduces oxidative stress. But really, the plant-based foods are the ones richest. You're not going to find that in your pretty much animal products. So I always tell people, limit your animal products. Make sure, if you are eating animal products, very, very, very clean sources, like grass-fed, grass-finished, the wild salmon. You know, try to make sure it's a local source and origin. You kind of know the quality. It hasn't traveled far. It's not like frozen and all this, like you try to want to know your food, where it's coming from. The local farmer down the road is the best way to get the animal protein, which sometimes is hard. But then the second part of your question is, as we age, we require less calories. And yes, that is true. Based on the person, you know, I've seen some people in their 50s and 60s out there playing tennis all day long. They're really active.
Sure.
And they're burning through a lot of calories. They might still have a lot of muscle.
They need it. Yeah.
They need it. But there's most of us, as we age, we lose, you know, our hormones are shifting. So we have less testosterone and estrogen. And so we're gradually losing about 10% of our muscle over time. And so, yes, that means you require less calories. But from a longevity standpoint, what I've been seeing a lot of research lately is kind of getting back to our ancestors and the way they ate. It wasn't feast, 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 feast. They didn't have food in abundance and grocery stores and all. They had to go hunt for their
food.
They would
graze, right? That's like paleo,
yeah,
right?
It was more of the fasting and the intermittent fasting. You know, in the wintertime, it was harder to find food. They kind of hibernated more, you know, and so their body would build up more fat and they would slow down. And then the summers, the spring, the food, the more food abundance. So I think fasting is a beautiful thing for people just to learn. Not necessarily if you don't want to fast, just eat less. I do think it is beneficial to create longer spans between your meals. Like grazing all day long is not, even if you stay within a calorie window, which again, I don't believe in the calories. but what happens is it puts you in a feed state all the time. So there's always insulin being produced if you're grazing through the day, which never gives your body a chance to rest and digest. It is very important for our gut microbiome. They actually do this sweeping motion. And when we sleep at night, actually, that's when they become, it's a motor active complex is what it's called. And so they sweep through and they kind of bring out any additional food substances that didn't get cleansed away. And so it kind of is like that, you know, street cleaner at the end of the night when they go through and take the brushes and clean the streets. Well, that's what's doing to your gut. And a lot of people eat late night or they're drinking alcohol or it's disrupting that gut microbiome. And then they get up in the morning, they eat their breakfast right away. They haven't given their body enough time to cleanse out the toxins and things like that. So when you have these longer fasts, like I'm talking over 12 hours, which I at least once a week try to do a long fast. Like today, I'm still fasting. And my reason is it's not weight or anything like that, but one, it reduces inflammation, slows the aging process because you're stimulating growth hormones, stem cells, autophagy, which is like my favorite thing that the body does. Our bodies are smart, very, very smart. They're intelligent. The problem is we just get in the way. You know, our lifestyle, our environment, stress, things like that. When you put your body in a state of autophagy, what the body is naturally doing, it's looking for the trash. So, okay, that's a damaged cell. Let's repair it and fix it so it works again. Or that's a damaged cell. It looks like it could turn into cancer. Let's rid of it. So the body's going through and taking out the trash. And the trash goes through your lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system is a system nobody talks about. And it's the sewage system of our bodies. And okay. So when our cells detox, like when we sleep, we fast, we go into autophagy and all that, it takes the garbage into the lymph. Now, if you're not moving your lymph because you have a desk job and you sit all day or you're in the car all day or you don't exercise, your lymph doesn't move. It has no pump like the heart and cardiovascular. It has no lung like the breathing to move it. So you have to manually move it. So that's why I encourage my clients is get up and move around during the day. Always make sure you're doing at least some form of exercise. It doesn't have to be all once. Even if it's spread through the day, you're getting little bits of that movement. Or just learn how to manually pump your own lymph. Things like dry brushing, you can actually pump your lymph in the lymph nodes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, like
some
of them are under your armpits. But one of the best tips I give people and the best ways to move your lymph is this right here.
But just breathing in and breathing out.
Just breathe. Yeah, there's a lot of lymph nodes right up in here. There's lymph in our stomach. There's lymph in our brain. It's all over our bodies. But just deep breathing puts you into a state of parasympathetic. It's funny. I was working with someone today and who was struggling with weight. And I said, you know, there's two things you need to focus on. It's not calories in versus calories out. Like, let's just put that out on the table. So stop fighting yourself with calories and overexercising. You need to do two things. One, we need to find the inflammation in your body and we need to reduce it because your body will not lose weight when you're inflamed. And number two, we need to get you out of a fight or flight. Like you're not being chased by a tiger, that's sympathetic. And we need to get you into a parasympathetic because your body won't lose weight when you're trying to chase a tiger. So we got to calm your body down. We got to reduce the inflammation. We got to heal the organs. And then guess what? The weight just falls off because the body knows how to take care of itself. So deep breathing is one of the, and this is how my yoga plays into all of this.
Yeah, and I want to get to that in a little bit because I know yoga is such a big deal for you. But let's stay on to intermittent fasting for just a little bit because I know we hear more and more about it. So you mentioned 12 hours. So you've got let's real life here. When was the last time you ate? What time?
I went to an event last night, so I think it was later than I normally eat. I think they served dinner probably around 7:30.
Okay.
I like to eat earlier. And I like to get, everyone should do 12 hours right there.
Right.
That's everyone's baseline. And then from there, depending what your goal is. So, I mean, I might just push a fast until 5 o'clock maybe today. I listen to my body. Again, it's not black or white. It's kind of, how do I feel today? You know, some mornings I wake up, I'm like, I'm really hungry. So why fight myself? I have a beautiful breakfast. And then there's mornings I wake up, I'm like, yeah, I'm not hungry at all. I'm going to fast and enjoy the benefits of my body doing its self-cleaning. So.
Sure. Well, I think 12 hours is doable for most people.
It's
I'm thinking 8 to 8 or so is not I mean, it depends what time you get up and go to bed. But 8 to 8 is not difficult. I mean, if you could push it a little bit more, though, you think bring it more to like a 15 hour?
Yeah, I encourage my clients to try to go between 14 and 16 hours. That's a sweet window. You still get a lot of great benefits, and it's not too hard on the body because fasting can be stressful too. And I also encourage people, don't fast unless you know your body's ready to fast, because you can get some big trouble. If your gut's not working and you're a constipated type of person, or you have high stress and you're now fasting, which causes more cortisol, then you're actually causing more inflammation. And if your gut's there, you're just recirculating the toxins. So you need to be ready to fast. So that's why you got to be careful with what's going out and the messages are being sent on other podcasts and education, that not everyone should fast until they've been evaluated and ready to fast.
That's important because we all hear about this intermittent fasting. And I think we all realize, like, it's just something we should try to do. And regardless, I mean, to just go into a cold turkey and not be ready for it. Let's go back to exercise. We mentioned yoga. So a lot of people exercise now, especially younger people, than they did years and years ago. And it's a great trend that we're seeing. How important is exercise to the anti-aging as well? And how often should we be exercising?
It's extremely important. Like I said, it's one way to move your lymph system. It's one, I always say, if you don't move it, you lose it. And, you know, with our balance as we age, we need to still work on our balance and our flexibility. And so all of those are part of keeping the body healthy. I like to call it flossing your joints. Now, let me ask you this question. Do you brush your teeth every day?
Of course.
Of course. And why do you brush your teeth?
Well, first you're supposed to, right? We're taught that at a very young age, but I want to keep my teeth clean and healthy and breath, you know, smelling nice and all that.
Right.
So, yeah.
And you want to prevent decay.
Absolutely.
So exercise is preventing decay of your body. So think of it that
way. It's a good way
to look
at
it. If you spend time every day brushing your teeth, you absolutely should spend every day moving your body, taking out the trash, moving the lymphatic system, moving toxins, reducing inflammation. And exercise can bring you into that parasympathetic state. It's an outlet. Getting emotions out and stress out, getting out in fresh air, breathing the fresh air, you know, being connected to the environment. We talk a lot about grounding, like the earth's energy, like put your feet in the ground, like get connected. And once you start doing that, it's that, those endorphins, they make you feel good. And so many people are struggling with depression. They've been locked inside for the past year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with all of this going on, not enough vitamin D. And so that is the solution. If you want to live longer and live healthier, you have to move your body. And it doesn't have to be intense. It doesn't have to be these like HIIT workouts, like beat up our body, like CrossFit
Pelotons
stuff.
And yeah.
No, it's a beautiful walk. It's going to the beach. It's playing with your kids or grandkids. It's just moving your body.
Just move, yeah. So for someone listening right now saying, you know what, I've been really wanting to exercise. I mean, at a minimum, what should they try to do? Should they try 20 minutes a day? Is that enough?
It depends on the goal. Just for maintenance, I say at least 30 minutes.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be all at once. So it could be 15 minutes after breakfast, 15 after lunch, 15 after dinner. You know, if my clients are more interested in weight loss and you need to burn a little more calories,
sure,
then I would say to go for an hour. But you also need to incorporate all forms of exercise, not just the cardio. So flexibility, I mentioned. So things like yoga, stretching, we got to keep your body mobile and limber. You have to work balance, which is something nobody thinks about. So let's reference back to that toothbrushing. You're there brushing your teeth. Why stand on 2 feet? 1 minute. You're supposed to brush 2 minutes,
right?
1 minute on your right foot and then 1 minute on your left foot.
Okay.
And there you've practiced your balance for the day.
Hopefully you didn't fall down while you're doing that. Yeah.
Exactly. So working the balance, working the flexibility, working the strength so we keep that muscle active, and then working the cardio. So those four systems are really important.
Interesting. So yoga. So I do have a yoga studio, and mm-hmm. we've discussed the whole hot yoga yes. phenomenon. So tell us a little bit about that and how important is yoga in general to could you just do yoga? Because I think you'll get everything you just mentioned. You'll get yeah. the strengthening, you'll get the balance, you'll get the flexibility.
Absolutely. And there's so many different styles of yoga. So it's kind of like going into the shoe store and trying on and see what fits. And I highly encourage that. I don't want someone to walk into a yoga studio and just have this, you know, pre-existing idea of this is what yoga is. It's just stretching. But there's some yogas like Ashtanga, like powerful movements and like get your heart rate up. And then there's like the vinyasa flow, which is the style I like to teach. Then there's the hot yoga, which is more on that intense side.
Right.
And then there's laughing yoga. There's yoga nidra, which I call sleepy yoga. There's yin yoga. So you really have to find the style that works for you and what your initial goal is. If you're going to yoga to decompress, go into parasympathetic state, you might just need a breathing class or a sound bowl class or a yin class, something like that. But if you're going for a workout plus the flexibility plus that mental, there's a whole mental aspect to yoga, then you might want to look for one of more of the power classes or do a combination. And like you said, you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Well, the mental part. So how about meditation?
Yes.
So is this something you practice yourself and are you an advocate of?
Yeah, absolutely. So I call it moving meditation, but then that's the actual yoga aspect of it is the moving part. But really how yoga was developed by the monks is they tried to meditate for not just minutes, hours, you know, they go all day, try 12 hours and meditate.
It's
and
tough to
that's
do.
That's tough to do, yeah. especially when the body has energy. So they said, well, let's move the body in this system of these different postures to move the energy. So once we're done with the movement, we've expelled the energy so we can actually meditate longer. And so really the key, and I coach this in my class, we do this great flow, I get a moving, then we go down to the deep hip openers and heart chakra openers, all that. And they get on the mat. I'm like, your class is just now starting. We've moved it all around. Now you get to lay there and meditate. I make them lay 10 minutes for this beautiful meditation. And you just come out of that feeling like a whole new person. You really do. And I try to incorporate a little bit of that spiritual side in, because when you lay still and you let your mind finally quiet, all clarity comes to you. You start to open up. You feel your body. You know, you're sensing things that when we are so crazy in our mind and our typical lifestyle here, it's go, 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 go. So many of us are plugged in, you know, this energy all day long. And it's so nice to be a human being instead of a human doing.
Yeah.
So to have that moment of that peace and serenity and to come still back into your body just really opens you up in your mind and everything. Things come more clear. Things just seem to just be happier. Like people are just a lot happier when they do yoga.
Sure.
You know, they give themselves a chance just to be them. And that's the beauty I found, because when I started in yoga, I was going to yoga because I thought it was exercise. I'm like, Bikram yoga is hot. It's hard. I come out like sweating, feeling drenched, like feeling amazing. And that was my initial draw. And I kept going back. I'm like, oh yeah, this is amazing, amazing. And then it slowly started working on me. I started untethering the mind. I started slowing down my thoughts. I started responding to situations differently. I started hitting that parasympathetic all the time. Like it really changed me. And I saw the impact. And I've been doing yoga for over 15 years.
Okay.
And it took me 10 years to get there, to where I finally said, oh, wow, it's changed me from a mental, physical, emotional, all of that. So it took me a little while to kind of still get out of that monkey mind. So I always tell people it's patience in the process with everything we do in life, but especially with yoga. It's not yoga perfect. It's yoga practice. And we're constantly practicing and honing in and learning our bodies. And so it's a journey at every age. So
sure.
Every age benefits from it. So on my balcony, I see my daughter's 14. So like her friends will come. So I see the young teenagers there all the way up to my 85-year-olds. And I love all ages at different aspects in their life. And they're all benefiting from the yoga.
Well, I know, I'll tell you, meditation is very difficult. I don't think people realize how hard it is, because I mean, you spend minutes with silence, and it's very easy to think about the emails you have to respond to.
Sure.
And little things like that. Very, I know you have to kind of pull yourself back into it, but very difficult. Let me ask you, back to aging just a little bit here. How much of it is mind over matter? And I say that because you hear lots of people say certain things. And recently I read something where someone was saying that it's in your mind. And, you know, when you say things like, oh, I'm getting old, or, oh, this is, you know, this is what happens when you get older, that's not a good thing to even say. I mean, you agree with that?
I absolutely believe mind over matter in all aspects. I mean, our minds are so powerful, and our bodies just naturally age, but our minds, we want to keep sharp. We want to keep youthful. We want to keep young. And if you keep manifesting that you're the vitality of a 20-year-old, then you're going to feel the vitality of a 20-year-old, you know, and if you keep embracing that. And one thing I love about Southwest Florida being down here is, yes, it is more of a retired community. There's the retireds that come down, but they're so active.
Incredibly.
I am like, well, he's in his 80s and he's still playing tennis. He's still running his company as a CEO. I'm like, oh, I have to age gracefully because I aspire to be like that. And when you let your body go, you let your mind go. When you think you're aging and you're going to sit in a lounge chair and watch TV, and that's your life as an older adult, then that's what you will end up doing. So you have to have that aspiration to keep your body moving, to keep young, and plug into what inspires you. You know, we all have different chapters in our life. We all go through different career transitions. I think the average person goes through 8 different career transitions in their life. You know, I went through 2. And I'm right back to where I was at square one because I knew what I wanted to do. But now I'm even more clear in my future vision and what I want to build now in this whole health arena. And marrying the fitness aspect with the yoga, with the nutrition, with the mindfulness. Like, it's a whole new chapter for me. And I'm so thrilled with what I'm doing and the research I'm doing so I have more knowledge to provide and inspire others, because we need more people like what the knowledge I have and some of these other healthcare professionals, because we have a very sick population right now. And I'm worried not only for where we are, it's our future generation and how sick they are going to be because of this American sad diet, the standard American diet. And what they're eating, and or more so what they're not eating. They're eating such processed and contaminated foods. They're not eating the wholesome foods. And my mission is really to not only inspire the adults, but the adults to let it transcend down to the kids. And if they're changing their environment in the home, then the kids are going to be following suit and hopefully pick up those practices that they'll pass on to their future generation.
And they're all exercising too, which is amazing because they're staying healthy from that point of view, but they're not eating what they should be.
Kids have higher cholesterol, and the cholesterol is elevated because their livers are fatty. And that's from all the high fructose corn syrup and the toxic oils that are so abundant in processed food.
Sure.
So it's
amazing. This is fascinating. I mean, I could go on all day.
Oh, I know, me too.
Betsy, any kind of final tips for our listeners, like just anything out there that you would say is, and even for someone who's listening right now and they haven't lived a healthy lifestyle until now and they're saying they want to do it, or one thing that they could do right now to just kind of get themselves into it?
I would say take baby steps. Every day, focus on one thing you can do to improve your health. Maybe it's one new choice, like, I'm going to eat an apple today. You know, instead of that bag of chips, I'm going to have an apple. Or she said to move more. So maybe after my meal, I'm just going to go for a 10-minute walk with the dog or something like that. Or, you know, maybe I'm just not going to drink that Coke. Or, you know, those little tiny things can add up over time. And the more you start to see the difference and feel the difference, the more you'll be attracted to those healthy habits. So stay in it. It's a marathon, not just a race. Yeah. You know, I think this is something that you should always focus on, because you can have, I say this all the time, you can have all the money in the world, all the wealth in the world. You cannot buy back your health. So
that is true. Well, excellent. I appreciate that. How can our listeners get in touch with you if they want to meet with you, get a consultation, ask you questions, things like that?
So my nutrition business is healthyconceptsconsulting.com would be my website. So you have a lot of my resources there, the different testing I offer, from genetic testing, micronutrients, stool testing, all of that. And then my yoga studio, the website is yoga4elements.com. So it's the 4 Elements Yoga Studio because it's an outdoor balcony studio. I want to connect everyone to the beautiful elements of Florida.
Love it. We'll post that on our social media sites as well, so they can get in touch with you. Betsy, this is terrific. It's always great to see you. It's been a while, so I'm glad we got to get together and great insight. We'd love to have you back if that's okay.
Absolutely.
To continue this conversation. But thank you again.
You're welcome. Have a healthy day.
You as well.
Thanks.